Today's shiur is Masechta Bava Basra Daf Nun. We will begin on Daf Mem Tes Amud Beis, three lines from the bottom, Ha'itma Allah. In the previous shiur, we had learned that the Mishnah said that a husband cannot establish a chazaka in his wife's property. But it clearly indicated that if the husband had a raya, if the husband had proper documentation indicating that his wife sold him a piece of property that she owned, then it would become his. Ask the Gemara that there's a concept known as nachas ruach asisi labali, that a wife could argue what she did, she only did because her husband asked her to do it, and she wanted to keep, as we spoke about Shalom Bayis. So why, ask the Gemara, is even if he has documentation that accepted as a proof that he indeed bought the property, why don't we say that she only agreed to this to sell it because of nachas ruach asisi labali? Answered the Gemara, Hotmela, because we learned regarding that concept, Amar Rabbi Rav Huna, Lo Nitzlecha, that din that we said that a woman could argue nachas ruach asisi labali, and therefore the sale would be voided, is only Elab Oisin Gimel Sadis, regarding specific fields which are assigned to pay specifically her husband's ksuba obligation to her. For as we learned, the subject there was that the husband sold a piece of property to someone else, but since every piece of property that a husband owns is actually mortgaged to his ksuba obligation to his wife, and that's why the purchaser went to the wife to purchase that lien. And so now the Gemara is saying that the din that sale is void is only regarding special fields that are assigned to the payment of the ksuba, which are acha shekosvu l'ksubasa, a land that the husband specified in the ksuba. That means that even though all of the husband's property is mortgaged for the ksuba, the woman relies more on this field because in the ksuba it was specifically indicated that this field would be used for collection in a ksuba. So therefore, this is a field that we could certainly argue the woman really never agreed to sell. It's only an issue of nachas ruach asisi labali. Achas sheyichla b'ksuba. This is a piece of property which he orally designated in front of Edim that should be used to pay her ksuba. Even though it wasn't written actually in the ksuba, this was designated after the marriage to be the property from which they would collect the ksuba. And the next is Vachas Shenichas Lo Shum Meshaloi. This, as we know, as we spoke in the previous year, there's Nichsei Tzoyim Basel of properties that the wife brings into the marriage whose value are recorded in the ksuba, and the husband is responsible to pay that value in case he dies before her or they get divorced. So this property, even though it's really no different than all the other properties the husband has that are mortgaged to the ksuba payment, a woman relies on this property more than all the other properties, because since she brought this property into the marriage from her father's home, she relies on it more to be used to collect the ksuba. Again, this is the pshat that the Rashbam uses in identifying these three properties. Tosfos has a different explanation. Tosfos says acha sheyichla b'ksubasai refers to a paitiki. When the Mishnah speaks about achsna mishaloi, it refers that since the husband since the father gave him a certain amount of property as Nadunya, he designates a corresponding amount of value property to pay the ksuba. There's also a machloikus rishonim, when the Mishnah that we're quoting now says that this sale is not considered a valid sale because the woman could argue it was only done because of nachas ruach asisli labali. What does it mean that it's void? Does it mean that it's totally void? And the Rishonim that hold that opinion feel that it's totally void because certainly it's not going to be in effect after the husband dies before the wife or after they're divorced. And therefore, it falls under the category of mekach shabotl miktsosoi botl kulay. Since it can't be valid for the entire duration, it's not valid at all. That's the opinion of some Rishonim. Other Rishonim, however, suggest that when we're saying that the sale is void, it only means that if the husband predeceases her, or if the husband divorces her, the person who bought this property cannot say to the wife, well, I purchased the lien you have on this property, and you can't come to this property to collect the ksuba. At that point, she could say, I never really sold you the lien, I only did it because of nachas ruach asisi labali. But certainly, until then, these Rishonim suggest it will be in the control of the buyer. Says the Gemara. The Mishnah, we said, clearly indicates that regarding these three fields, the wife sale of these three fields is not considered a valid sale because she could say, as we learned, nachas ruach asis labali. Lemute mai, what properties does Rav Huna mean to say that it only applies to these fields, not to other fields? Ilema lemuti shar nechasim, if you're going to say that other properties, which as we've been saying, are all really mortgaged to the ksuba, but those properties, she can't argue nachas ruach asul baila. So as the Gemara, that doesn't make sense. Koshkein dehavlei eva. Certainly, she could say that I agreed only to avoid dispute between you and me. Me meaning the wife and you being the husband. Damala. Because he would say to her, if you're not willing to sell this property, obviously, einacha nasat begerishim amesa. You're anticipating our marriage to be terminated, and that's why you're not agreeing to sell this property, because you're assuming that our marriage is about to end, and you need these properties to collect your ksuba. So therefore, if by the properties that were designated for the ksuba payment, she could argue, says the Gemara, nachas ruach asisi labali. Certainly in properties that were not designated for the ksuba, she could say that the only reason I agreed to the sale was not because I really agreed, but only because I wanted to avoid the fight. I wanted to avoid my husband saying that you're not agreeing because you think we're going to get divorced. In fact, I saw that Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein uses this concept of nachas ruach, that were concerned about Eva and necho nesata begerishin, in a very interesting shaila that he discusses. He discusses a situation where there was a couple married in a second marriage, and the husband got very ill, and the wife, the husband's children from his first marriage, wanted out of their own funds to get doctors and nurses to give him extra private care. And the wife said, no, I take offense at this because it seems that you think that I'm not capable of taking care of my husband. Says Rabbi Yitzchak Zilberstein, the children could force that they should have this private care, provided that they're paying, because they could always argue that perhaps you're not going to give, it's a little difficult to say, but perhaps you're not going to give our father the proper care, and you're only, and Shemai Nechon Nesata Bemisa, that you want our father to pass away, and you won't have to take care of him anymore. Says the Gemara, El Lemute Nechsimilog. What Rabbi Huna meant to say was that Nechsimilog, there, the sale will be binding. Why? Because since the Nechsim Melug always, as we explained in the previous year, remain the wives, it's only that the husband is entitled to eat the payers of the Nechsim Melug. So the wife clearly could say to the husband, I'm not ready to sell my Nechsim Melug. And no husband could take offense at a wife saying, I'm not prepared to sell the Nechsim Melug, because they're her property, and she doesn't want to sell her property. If the wife didn't say it, she can't afterwards claim Nachas Ruach Asisi Labali. Ask the Gemara, is this true? That on at least the Nechsim Melug, the halacha is that if the husband and the wife both sell the property, the sale is a valid sale. Ask the Gemara, Ha'omer Ameimer, didn't Ameimer teach us Ish v'Isha Shemachru b'Nechsim Melug? And the Gemara at this point is assuming that we're referring to a situation where a husband and then the wife sold the Nechsim Melug. The sale is like Asav Klum, the sale is considered void, because the wife could always argue Nachas Rachasi Silabali. So the Gemara's question is, how are we saying that by Nechsim Melug the wife cannot argue that I agreed to the sale, only because Nachas Ruachasi Silabali, Amema says even in that situation the wife can make such an argument? Says the Gemara, Ki Itmed Amema. A Maimer is not referring to such a situation. Rather, a Maimer is referring to a situation Heichen de Zobin Iwamis. The husband sold his rights to the Melug property, and then he died. And Remaimer is teaching us that Osi Ihi, she has a right to come, or Mafka, and take it away from the purchaser. Because since it's her property, he has no right to sell the property. And here we have a machloikas rishonim. When the Gemara says here that when he died, when he sold the Nechsim Melug property, and afterwards he dies, she could collect it back, what does that mean? Similar to what we discussed a few moments ago. Does that mean only after he dies she can say so? But prior to his death, it does belong to the purchaser? Or is it even before his death, since he can't permanently sell it, the Nechsim Melug belonged to her, even prior to the death, the sale will be void? Actually, there's a raya from the wording of the Gemara to the first opinion. Because if the halacha is that such a sale that he made and she didn't agree to is totally void, then why does the Gemara have to speak about a case of Heichen de Zobin Iyu Umis? It doesn't have to wait for him to die to be void. If according to the second opinion, it's void immediately. So the Rishonim that do agree with the second opinion say, because since regarding her situation, it's only that we're going to speak in a minute about, only is relevant Umis, so the Gemara speaks about the case Umis. But really, those Rishonim, which is actually the opinion of most Rishonim, say that the sale is void from its inception. Another explanation that the Miri suggests why the Gemara only spoke about the sale being void after he's dead, if the halacha according to the Miri is that it's void immediately, because even though it's immediately void, typically the wife will not say anything. Again, because she doesn't want to antagonize her husband. And she will wait only after he passes away to say something. Why is the halacha that he can't sell it? Why is the sale totally void? So one pshat is, as we said before, is because mekach shebatel miktsasai batel kulay. And since everyone is of the agreement that after his death the sale is void, the halacha is that it's mekach shebatel miktsasai batel kulay. Another pshat that the Rishonim give is that when Chazal gave the husband the right to eat peiros, it's not pshat that they gave him full ownership on the peiros. Of course he isn't a full-fledged owner of the peiros. What they gave him was a right to eat peiros, but doesn't give him a right to sell something that he doesn't really own. He has just a schus achila, a right to eat. Another pshat that the Rishonim suggest is that this entire concept of nichsei malug, that the wife brings into the marriage and the husband eats the peiros, is all something that is in the covered base of iha. It's the honor of the woman's family, and it's certainly very embarrassing that these nechasim that were brought in to help the couple live from should be sold. Inami, what was Ameima referring to? Govi ihi yemesi, where she sold Zovni Iyu Meisi, that she sold the title to land and then she died. And the halacha is Os Ihu Umapik, that even though the land, as we've been saying, Nifsi Malug really belongs to her, if she predeceases him, he could go to the person who purchased the land and take it away from him because of Takanta Drabonan, a special Takan of Drabonan. Here everybody agrees that it means only after she dies. Most Rishonim certainly agree that it only is batel after she dies. But as long as she's alive, there the halacha will be that the purchaser keeps it. There are Rishonim that differ, and they say that even while she's alive, since he ultimately inherits her, the sale is totally void. The Prisha asks, we need to understand what is the nafkamina in this machlokes Rishonim, if the sale is immediately void or it's only void after she dies. The sale is certainly not completely valid because the peiros, she never had a right to sell, because the peiros, as we've been learning, belonged to the husband. And therefore, let's understand, as long as she and he are alive, so the peiros belong to him. If she dies before him, then even the land goes to him. So what is the nafkamina, asked the Prisha, who is the owner of the land at this point? So one nafkamina, he says, regarding a prosbul, as we've learned, Hillel instituted the prosbul to avoid shmita problems, and Hillel's din of prosbul, to make a prosbul you have to own property, and the question is this considered, whose property is it considered? Another nafkamina would be if the husband can make physical changes to this property, or the purchaser can make physical changes to the property. It depends who is the owner of this property. Another nafkamina is the subject of another machlokes Rishonim. Here we're clearly learning that if she sold the property and then she died before the husband, the halacha is that the husband goes to the purchaser and takes back the land. The question is, does the husband have to reimburse this purchaser for the money that she got for the sale of the land? And perhaps it's a machlokes Rishonim. And perhaps that machlokes Rishonim is based on the shaila of who is considered the owner of the land. If the purchaser became the owner of the land, albeit only until the wife died, then he has to get reimbursed for his land that's being taken away from him. But if we say that, like the opinion of the Rishonim, that the sale was never a sale and he never got the land, maybe he doesn't have to get reimbursed. And why is this? Because we learned Rabbi Yosef ben Chanina said, Rabbi Yosef ben Chanina, Busha Skina, he shishamacha ben Nechsi Melug. If a woman sells a nechsi melug or meis and then she dies, haba moitz miyad l'kuchas, the husband could take it away from the people who purchased this property. That is what Amaim is referring to. Avo, says the Gemara, heicha dezvinu tavayu la'alma, it could well be that Amaim will agree that if the husband and the wife both sold nechsi melug property, inami zevne il of the day, or if the wife sold to her husband nechsi meluk property, which will be the case of our Mishnah, even our Meimah will agree the zvina zvina, the sale is considered a full fledged sale. Vibay Seima. Now the Gemara gives a new teretz. Till this point, our Gemara was trying to reconcile that a Meimah's opinion and the opinion of the Mishnah should be able to go together. Now the Gemara says that a Maimer indeed holds that the sale of any Melug property, whether the husband and wife sold it together, or whether if the wife sold it to the husband, is always void. Even though the Mishnah, according to Rabbi Rav Huna's explanation, doesn't hold that way. But the Gemara is saying now that a Maimer follows the opinion, a Maimer Domek Reb Elazar, and the Mishnah follows the opinion of the Chachamim. Where do we find, says the Gemara, the opinion of Reb Elazar? The Tanya. It says, we learned in a Braisa. The Torah teaches us that if somebody has somebody kills a Jew, the halacha is, he has to, if it's B'shagig, he goes to Golis, B'mezid, he gets killed. But there's a very new din regarding somebody who hits his Eved Kanani. The Torah speaks about Yoim or Yomayim. If the Eved doesn't survive Yoim or Yomayim, and as the Gemara explains, Yoim or Yomayim, what does the Torah say? Yoim, one day or 2 days. If it's 2 days, certainly one day is 2 days. It means that he survives for 24 hours. Then, even if he ultimately dies from this blow, the owner is exempt. If he dies before, then the owner is not exempt. And I saw, this is a Xerus HaKasif, but I did see a vart from the Kotzke Rebbe explaining this din. He says like this, if an owner gave his Eved Kanani such a serious blow that the Eved cannot survive even 24 hours, that blow is considered that he was mafker the Eved. And if he was mafker the Eved, it's no longer an Eved. And it's like hitting any other Jew. But if the blow is not such a serious blow, because the Eved Kanani could survive 24 hours, then he wasn't mafker the Eved. And the Eved Kanani is his property, and if it's his property, the halacha is that he doesn't go to Golos or get killed for killing his own property. So the Braisa discusses the following situation. Hamoicher is avdoi, if somebody sells his eved, or pasukimai, but he made up with the owner, with the buyer. And as the Mefarshim explained, it wasn't that it was a tenai, but rather it was a shiur. He said that I'm selling it to you, but I'm sort of limiting this sale by saying to you, shim shemshenes shloshim yoim, that he should continue working for the first owner for 30 days. So who was considered the owner regarding the din of Yom Yomayim? Ramei Yom HaRishin Yeshu B'din Yom Yomayim. The special din of Yom Yomayim applies to the first owner. Because he's still under his authority. The Sheni, the second owner, Ein B'din Yom Yomayim, Nesh Ein HaTachtav. Kesavar, because Ramei is of the opinion, Kinyan HaPeiris, the one who has the proudest, the one that has benefit from an item, Kikinyan Aguftam, is considered the owner. And therefore, the first owner who has the right to continue using the Eved is considered the owner. I actually saw a very nice vart on this concept of kinyan peiros kinyan aguf tami. The Torah teaches us that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Noach to go to the Teva, he told him, Atakach lecha, become machel, take all the food, take food into the Teva. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells him, Bahoy lecha olahem laochla. You and the animals will be able to eat that food. So, Rabbi Yitzchak Yeruchim Diskin asks that we know the Torah says that the halacha is that the pasuk says v'nasati esav lebehemtecha v'chalta v'savata, that a person is supposed to first feed his animals and then eat himself. So here, why does the Torah say that Noach should first eat and then feed his animals? So he answers that Noach's ownership of these animals was only a kinyan peiros, because people weren't allowed to eat animals until after the mabul. Only at that point that Kadosh Baruch Hu authorized the eating of animals. So a person, Noach's ownership of the animals was no more than a kinyan peiros. So he explains as follows: when does the Torah teach us lebehemtecha, that you have to feed your animals first? That's only when you have a kinyan haguf in your animals. So they go before we go to eat. But here, when Noach only had a kinyan haperis, there this then doesn't apply, and therefore the Torah says, you eat first. Rabbi Yehuda takes the opposite opinion. He says, Asheni, the second owner, he is considered the real owner, and is therefore the din, yeshta b'din yom yimayim, applies to him. Neshu kasboy, the eved belongs to him. Harishin is not considered the owner, ena b'din yom yimayim. But why? Shana kasboy, he isn't the owner of the guf of the animal. Because obviously, Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, the opposite of Ramey's opinion, is Kesavar Kinyan Peiros Lavka Kinyan Goftami. Rabbi Yossi says a different explanation. Shneim Yeshna B'din Yom Yomayim. Both of them, the din of Yom Yomayim applies to both of them. Zeb Neshu Tachtov, the first owner, because he still is working for the first owner. Zeb Neshu Kasboy, and the second owner, because the slave is his actual property. Umasapkale, because what is the basis of Rabbi Yossi's reasoning? E kinyan peiros kinyan guftami. Who is really considered the owner? Do we say that the one that has the kinyan peiros is the one that considered an owner? Ilav kinyan guftami, or is the one that's the owner of the actual eved considered the owner? And since we don't know, sofik nefashos lahakol, Rabbi Yossi says we should be makel, and both of them have this din of sofik nefashos lahakol. So the Rashbam explains, why do we say Safek Nefashos Lahakol? Because the Torah says, V'shafto Eida, V'tzilu Eida. So from here we learn, in all areas of Halacha, the din is Safek Nefashos Lahakol. Ask Taisris on the Rashbam, that why do we have to rely on the Pasuk of Safek Nefashos Lahakol, V'shafto Eida, V'tzilu Eida? Why don't we just say, Hamaitzi Mechaveira, Olav Araya? Since We want that the owner should have to pay, we can't force the owner to pay because we don't know who the owner is. So Rav Chanan teaches us a very interesting teretz. He says that if we were relying simply on the concept of Hamaitzi Mechaveira Olav Haraya, so there it's a suffix. Because it's a suffix, we leave everything status quo. On the other hand, Shafto Eda V'Stila Eda, that the Torah teaches us Sofik Nefashos Lahakol, is not just that it's teaching us that we have a Sofik, so we leave status quo. Sofik Nefashos Lahakol is a Vadai. Whenever you have a question that involves Nefashos, what do? We go Lakula. And the Brisker Rav gives a very nice example where this would be relevant Laloch Lamaisa. He says, what would be the halacha where you have an owner, where you have an individual who has a kinyan peiros in one eved and a kinyan aguf in a second eved, and he strikes both of these vadim, and both of them die after 24 hours. So, if we use pure logic, we should say that he's certainly chai misa, because one of the avodim he did is not his avodim, and he's chai misa even if the avod survived 24 hours. But now that we established the softer eda v'tzila eda, that pasuk teaches us that he's sofik nefashis lahakel, that it's not just a shaila and we don't know what to do. Sofik nefashis lahakel teaches us that he's exempt, even though one of the two slaves is not the subject of Yom Yomayim as far as he's concerned. Rabbi Chanan gives another teretz to Tosfos' question. He says that Tosfos wanting to use the concept of a mitzim chaveroi, all of a raya, that's only regarding civil cases. But here we're talking about a capital case. By capital case, which is ben odom lemakoyim, there we don't use the concept of hamoitz mechaver olav araya. And he explains, because the entire concept of hamoitz mechaver olav araya is based on the on muchsik, on somebody holding on to something, and I can't take it away from him unless I have unequivocal proof. But that's only relevant ben odom lechaveroi, not ben odom lemakoyim. Another nafkamina, we gave the Brisker Rav's nafkamina, if the p'tur is because of the shafteid v'tzil edu, or the proof is because of mitzvah chaveril of a raya, we gave one from the Brisker Rav. Rav Shmuel Rozovsky says another nafkamina will be regarding the din of goyel hadam. If we're going to use the din because of that if the goyel hadam of the eved will kill the owner, he'll be exempt. But if we're saying that there's a din vadai that sofek nefashos lahakel here, then the goyel hadam has no right to touch this owner, and if he does, he will be considered a murderer. Another nafkamina I saw is regarding the question of kimlei the mederabnei. What would be the halacha if when the owner killed this Eved, he also caused a monetary loss? If we say that the Shofta Eid Vatzila Eida, and he's completely exempt from Dine Misa, so then Kimlei B'Drabnei kicks in. But if it's only a Sufik, then Kimlei B'Drabnei would apply, and he would also be parted from the Mon. Rav Elazar has a fourth opinion. Shneim ena b'din yomayim. According to Belezer, neither of them is subject to din yomayim. Zelafish ena tachtav, v'zelafinish ena kaspay. Here, he because he doesn't own the eved, and he because he doesn't control the eved. Rav explained, my Talmud Rav Elazar, what is the basis for Rav Elazar's ruling? Because amakra layukam ki kaspayhu. Only kaspay hamayuchad loy. Only if he has complete ownership. Similarly, Rebbe Lezer will say, selling maloi property, neither the husband nor the wife, nor both of them together have the ability to sell the nechsei malug, because they don't have complete ownership. And Rebbe Lezer says you have to have complete ownership to be considered kasbai. Says the Gemara, v'loi le'ish chazaka b'nechsei ishtai. A man, we learned in the Mishnah, cannot establish chazok in his wife's property. Ask the Gemara, Vama Rav. Rav told us, Eishes ish, tzricha lemchais. A wife does have to be moicha if somebody's in a property. Ask the Gemara, B'man. Who is the Rav referring to? Ilayim ba'acher. If somebody else is on property that belongs to the wife, not the husband, from a Rav, nobody could establish a chazaka on an Eishes property. And the Mefarshim give a number of explanations why nobody could establish such a chazaka. One explanation is because since the wife knows, we're talking about Nechsei Malug, since we know that since the wife knows that the husband is eating the peiris of the Nechsei Malug, so she relies that the husband will make the mechal. But if that's the explanation, say to Mefarshim, then we go back to what we learned in the previous year, where a husband has a right to say, Dinu Dvarim, Eli, the Paris Eli, they doesn't want to get the Paris, then she can't rely on him being Meicha. So that's why the Rashba explains that a wife relies on the husband, not because the husband gets the payrus, and that's why the husband's going to be Moicha. A wife relies that if the husband sees that his wife's situation, that his wife or her property are being hurt, he'll stick up for his wife. If that's the reason, then even if he gave up, and even if he relinquished his rights to the payrus, the wife relies, his wife relies that he will be Moicha. Elalav, it's talking about Babal. Rav said that she has to protest against the husband if he's on the property. But now we have a question. Why does she have to protest if, as our Mishnah just taught us, he can't establish a chazaka anyway? Says the Gemara, Amar Rava Loilam Babal. It's talking about that the wife has to protest against the husband. But what is the case referring to? Where the husband did something physically, dug in the property. If she there, since he did a physical thing in the property, if she isn't Maicha, he will establish a chazaka. Machlaikis, how fast he'll establish the chazaka. Posh Pshat, most Rishonim say that he'll establish a chazaka immediately. Some say that even Chafa Paris and Paris Sichram Aris, he'll need 3 years to establish a chazaka. There's also a machloikis. Al Gemara is saying that if the husband was Chafa Paris Sichram Aris and the wife didn't protest, then the halacha is that he establishes a chazaka. So the Rishonim also point out, the Rivash says this, it has to be specifically, and this will work beautifully in the Gemara as we continue learning, specifically if he does a destructive act in the property. But if he makes a physical change in the property, which is a constructive act, that won't be the same as Chafabas Sichin Myris. Furthermore, argue the Rishonim, why would be the halach if somebody else was Chafabas Sichin Myris? Most Rishonim say that there won't be a chazaka. Because the reason that we said before that the wife relies on the husband to protest, that's why she could say she didn't protest even when somebody made a physical damage in the property, because she could say, I was relying on my husband. Ask the Gemara, Vam Rav Nachman Amar Rav Avua, a chazaka and a zokim, that by digging in a property and you don't establish a chazaka. Answers the Gemara, Ema ein din chazaka l'nezakim. What it means is that the regular halacha of chazaka, that's why we're going to learn the Gemara, that the regular din of chazaka, that you need to have 3 years to establish chazaka, doesn't apply here. Here, you have a chazaka, when somebody makes a chayfa by a tzirich n'mayris, you have a chazaka immediately. Another pshat is that, because we said just a moment ago that some Rishonim say that here too you need 3 years, how will they explain this Gemara? They're going to explain that ain't din chazaka l'nezakim means as follows, that even though normally the halach is that a husband cannot establish a chazaka in his wife's property, here that din doesn't apply, and after 3 years a husband can establish chazaka in the property. Ibai Seima, another way of understanding the words ain't chazaka l'nezakim, lav itmala, Ramariyama Bakutra, it refers to smoke, that if somebody has a furnace, even if he's been doing it for a long time, you could ultimately complain. Ramariyama Basakise, the bathrooms that they had in those days that were particularly disturbing, and there the person could say, I thought that I could stand this, but I really can't. Or another pshat is that nobody would agree to such a situation, and the reason they weren't Maicha is because obviously they just didn't have the time to be Maicha. Rabbi Yosef gives a different explanation. Again, we had a problem, we had an issue, the Rav says that a Esh Sish has to protest to prevent the Chazaka, and the Mishnah says, and obviously, as we said, it must be regarding a husband. And yet our Mishnah says that a husband can't establish a chazaka on his wife's property. Rav Yosef says, L'oilam ba'achar. The case that Rav is referring to that you have to protest is when somebody else is on the wife's property. What is the case? That this person came on the property during the husband's lifetime, and then he remained on the property for Sholosh for 3 years, and he says he has a chazaka, and he's backing up his chazaka by saying that he bought the land from the husband who bought it from the wife. And Rav teaches us that if the wife did not protest, then this person's claim is believed, because Migui Dibay Amalei, he always has a Migui that he could have said, Anoz Vinta Minoch, I bought it directly from you. So therefore, Kiyamala Nami, even when he says, Atzavintalei, that you sold it to your husband, Vazavna Nili, and I bought it from your husband, Mehemed, this person, given that he was on the property for 3 years after the husband died, has a claim. And the Mefarshim say, why do we have to speak about a case that he was on the property from before the husband died and then remained on it afterwards? Why don't we just say that he was on the property 3 years after the husband died? Because as we've been explaining, the only reason a wife doesn't protest is because she relies on the husband. But when she doesn't have a husband, she doesn't have that excuse. Answer the Rishonim, because the Mishnah, the Gemara wants to teach, Rabbi Yosef wants to teach us a Chiddush, that even though he started from before the wife, the husband died, so the wife could say, I just left the status quo and I didn't protest when my husband is alive, so that's why I continued not to protest. We don't accept that claim, and we say that if he was on the property for 3 years after your husband died, you should have protested, and if you didn't protest, he establishes a chazaka. Gufa, and says the Gemara, Amar Rav, Eimach Zika Menechsei Eishes Ish. One can't establish a chazaka in the property of an Eishes Ish. For the Yonah Gola, the Dayanim of Gola, which are Shmuel and Karna, said Machzikim. One can establish a chazaka in a wife's property. She should have protested. Amar Rav, Halacha ke Dayanah Gola. The Halacha follows the Dayanah Gola. Amalei Rav Kahana v'Rav Asi l'Rav Hod be'mar mishmatzei. The Rav retracted his original psak where Rav said that ein machzikin. Amalehu, so he says no. When did Rav say his din? Mistaber amak Rav Yosef. This that Rav says that he's agreeing with the Yonah Gaila is in the situation that Rav Yosef explained to us, where this person was on the property before the husband died, and then remained on the property for 3 years after the husband dies. There, Rav will agree that this occupant can establish a chazaka by the wife not protesting. But in a case where the husband is alive, that will be the subject of a machloikus between Rav and the Dayani Goyla. According to Rav, the occupant does not establish a chazaka, because the wife could argue, I relied on my husband, whereas Shmuel and Kana say that even in such a situation, the wife, the person can establish a chazaka by saying, why didn't you issue, to the wife, why didn't you issue a protest? And also the Rashbam points out that Rabbi Yosef lived many years after Rav. So Rav could have never actually said, Amri could Rabbi Yosef, that I spoke about the case that Rabbi Yosef identified. Rav didn't see Rabbi Yosef. What it means is that the Gemara, Rav came to this explanation on his own, but the Gemara, instead of repeating the entire wording, just relied saying Rabbi Yosef, because we just learned what Rabbi Yosef said at the bottom of the previous Amid.